United States is 98-469, Georgiana Colvin versus Abby Dressler.
Appeal. Of course, you've been able to do it at the conclusion of all the evidence. it were not going to require a final judgment. If it becomes final at the moment the order is made, then why not let that center appeal on the spot?
Along with that, I find the other thing interesting. Now, the trial court has granted a new trial that the defendant before us doesn't now want.
Correct. If a new trial is not granted on motion of any party, I don't know if that's a very significant issue. This was granted under Rule 49. Based on those answers, which were clearly insufficient in the general verdict, the court was required to take some action. And three choices: render the judgment in accordance with the answers, contrary to the general verdict, return the jury for further deliberation, or order a new trial. The fall of the judge's court, and he chose to order a new trial. Nothing was taken away from the defendant. That order didn't determine the action, didn't prevent the judgment. It was a choice which the civil rules clearly allowed the trial to pursue. Now,
the propriety of that order really never was decided by the Court of Appeals, albeit the argument. The propriety of a new trial order is really not an issue here today.
Never attacked by the defendant,
right.
Never claimed that there was anything wrong with that action or abuse of discretion or appeal, and no attack. Court of Appeals didn't pass on it because of an old line of cases prior to 1965. Which had held at a time when this court was in a tug of war with the legislature, as to who had the right to define what was a final order for appeal. At a time when this court said the new trial orders were not appealable, even though the legislature said they were, there was an exception carved out which made motion for directed verdict appealable and reviewable after judgment.
Why would judgment not have been entered here? Was it just a ministerial error?
No, Your Honor, it's impossible. When the trial judge is faced with inconsistency between a general verdict and an interrogatory, the entering of the judgment is only one of the options available. This is not something that the parties can control. This is something that's vested in the discretion of the trial judge. If the trial judge had selected that other option and rendered judgment in accordance with the answer to the interrogatory,
and then granted a new trial. And then granted a new trial?
You mean on our motion?
After entering the judgment.
I suppose we could have asked for that on the grounds that the answer to the interrogatory
don't you automatically file a motion for a new trial before you appeal?
I do not. I mean, I know that's practice in part of many practitioners, but you spend 10 days for the appeal.
So if the judge here just set aside the verdict, entered judgment for defendant, he would appeal.
Well, yes. And hold the basis of what I just described. And that's the review of the court would have had to. Now, I theory, I suppose the trial judge would have acknowledged himself and reflected on an option at the time of the judgment.
Do you concede that what the trial judge did, Judge Morgan had the authority to do?
Yes. The entering of a new trial.
Why would that not have been the final order? Mm-hmm. Why would it not have been appealable then? Why would it not have been appealable then?
It is appealable. The granting of the new trial.
Yes.
And what we said in the Court of Appeals was only issue is whether or not that was an appropriate step. And as a practical matter, the only question, in my opinion, would be whether or not that was an abuse of discretion. There is no other basis to attack. We will clearly require him to make one of those choices to allow him to make that choice.
Is the granting of a new trial, the final appeal order, because in effect it negates the jury's verdict? Is that what makes it? Because it doesn't, if the case is tried over, you could argue that, well, it doesn't really, the issue's not been determined, but I guess it's determined to the extent that order is the same as reversing, I guess, the order of the trial court. Is that, or the verdict of the jury? Is that
the easy answer to the question that you started out asking
says it is. I'm trying to kind of understand the rationale of it with our case.
And there are separate descriptions of orders that give jurisdiction for appeal of that statute.
The trial judge did say judgment entry. The court has filed a judgment entry in these cases as to those matters where the jury verdicts were consistent with the interrogatory. So it's on the list of them.
Yes.
Now, what in your mind would have something to do with the transfer trial as to the heartfelt entry? What should the judge have done, or could the judge have done anything to allow the issue of the
direct appeal? In the face of inconsistency, Rule 49 determines the option. He could not ignore mandatory obligation. He can choose one of the three options, but he must comply with Rule 49.
So when you have an appeal on how to be found, you can't look at that issue in light. You have to look at that issue in light of what happened in the trial. And if you're looking at that, you see a glaring problem in the trial, i.e. the judge should have granted the absent verdict. You can't tell us that the jury would say, okay, we're not going to look at that because we're not allowed to. The judge is using discretion and the trial didn't. I mean, you can't do that in isolation. You have to look at the whole picture. You have a completed trial, completed evidence, completed ruling.
Your Honor, all I can say is that in the world in which I am used to operating, there is a completed trial. This trial, as against this defendant, was never finished. It is no different than if there is a mistrial declared for witness or lawyer misconduct, partway through the defense case. Would you then say that the order granting a new trial, based upon the mistrial, may file an appealable interlocutory order or rule of motion for direct verdict? I don't think so. And the second answer, Your Honor, is that if you are suggesting, which is after all, let's just look at the merits and get it over with all one time, what we're doing is going back to that time when there was case after case after case in this court. We discussed this very question, which supposedly was resolved by the Crichton versus McCoy decision that said from now on, the Court of Appeals has jurisdiction to review those orders which meet the requirements of 2505-402. And there is no question, I don't think, but that the order overruling the motion for direct verdict neither determines the action nor presents the judgment. It doesn't meet the standard. And that is why.
So if it just doesn't meet the standard, and they're not assuming at the end of that motion, they're assuming at the end of the granting of a motion for new trial, it does meet the standard. You want to separate out any error that occurred in the
Because the judge could have entered a judgment not within the brief of the jury, I guess.
He could have had that with a choice available to him, and then the question would have been, what was that appropriate choice?
But the book doesn't distinguish between judgment and motion to it just says an order granted in his property, which is why that you are to read it as a statement.
No, no, no. What I'm trying to say to you, the distinction I'm trying to discuss with you, is the distinction between that part of the statute that defines a final order in terms of determination of the action and prevention of justice, and that part of the same statute which makes a new trial order appealable. Now, if they mean the same thing, so why do we have two separate sections? The theory behind making, I don't really like those.
Your time, I mean, you quick, but you have to continue answering the question to keep the time going. So.
As I understand it, the theory that makes interlocutory orders reviewable when there has been a final judgment, the action you took, is that those interlocutory orders have emerged from the final judgment. In this case, there is no final judgment.
Mr. Murphy, how procedurally do you see this case now? Do you read the Court of Appeals opinion, as I think I do, in effect, granting judgment for you?
Well, yes, the Court of Appeals decision said that plaintiffs failed to prove their case as a matter of law. My client was entitled to judgment. Yes, that was the Court of Appeals decision.
But they remanded it back to the trial court. They didn't enter judgment under Rule 12 for you, did they?
I think they said for findings not inconsistent with our decision. That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so you appealed to them on the basis that the new trial was granted.
Correct.
They reversed and said, yes, a new trial should not have been granted, but that a directed verdict should be for you.
Well,
they didn't quite go that far.
They did, in fact, address both issues, and somebody raised that question earlier, so I got the trial for the Court of Appeals decision out, so I can cite it to you. But at the bottom of page 5, they make it clear that we raised the new trial order for the Court of Appeals. And then on page, I believe it's 19, they do go on to say that, of course, that the trial court erred in ordering the trial.
Yes, I read that. I agree. And so if they erred in if you erred in granting a new trial, then that leaves you with there should have been no new trial. There should have been judgment entered.
Correct.
And then the other side would have been able to appeal that.
Right, and then they're trying to appeal in that case. It should have either been a judgment in the trial level, it should have been either a judgment for Hartsville Pantry or a judgment against Hartsville Pantry in the amount of $12,000, which would have been consistent with the verdict. In that case, it would have been the plaintiff's turn to appeal.
The reason I press you on it is because it seems to me that reading the Court of Appeals opinion, when it's remanded back to the trial court's going to have to enter judgment for you and against them.
Correct.
Does that give them then the right to appeal?
Yes and no, it does, but it
can't be both.
It's the end of the case. What the Court of Appeals is going to review the second time around, we've got the same transcript and the same question as a matter of law.
But the issue is different. Is it not?
No, because they're making a decision consistent with the Court of Appeals decision. They're entering judgment consistent with the Court of Appeals decision. That's the beauty of the system that we now have, Your Honor, and that is once you finish the trial and all the witnesses have testified and the arguments have been made and everything is in one transcript, in this case, thousands of pages, you send it to the Court of Appeals and you say, okay, look at this,
and please look at it all. It has taken care of all of the error. It has completed everything. There's nothing left to do in this case. I think one of the justices raised that issue earlier. What's left to happen? We have had our trial. Everybody has had their opportunity. They're one bite of the apple, so to speak. And there's nothing left to be done in this case other than review one transcript. If you accept the appellant position in this case, and you go to the Court of Appeals with thousands of pages, and you say, only look at one issue. Now, we know they've got to look at 1,000 pages. This is an abuse of discretion standard. And if I don't take the transcript, I model my ears. So I take the thousands of pages of transcript, and I say, please, look at these, but only look at the new trial order. We go back to the trial court, they agree, because they didn't look at the other errors that we raised in the Court of Appeals, like the jury instruction, which was a fundamental error that really led to the whole problem. I think we explained some of that statement of fact. And also the directed verdict. You're virtually guaranteeing yourself multiple trials and multiple appeals, because in the second appeal, you're back in the Court of Appeals and you say, well, you didn't address the jury instruction the first time around, but here's the first 2,000 pages of transcript, and let us know if there was any error there. And now since we have the second trial, I want you also to look at the second set of thousands of pages of transcript and tell us whether or not there was error in the second trial also. That's the beauty of our current system versus the system that the appellant has suggested. To get back to something else that you said a moment ago, and that is, procedurally, where do we stand today? I think that's an important concept for this panel to consider, because the question I have is, to what end are we going to change appellate practice? What are we hoping to accomplish in this case? The Court of Appeals has already said it's a matter of law that my client's entitled to judgment. And that's never been appealed. That stands as the law of this case at this point in time. The Court of Appeals has also said that the trial court erred in ordering a new trial. That has not been appealed. So if we send this case back to the Court of Appeals, what have we accomplished for litigants in this case?
What is he appealing?
Pardon me?
What is he appealing?